For many of us, parenting is a spiritual task. It's part of how we define our sense of meaning and purpose. The well-being of our children is something that is close to our hearts and that really shapes our sense of who we are and how we are in the world. So when our child is having challenges, it draws on our spiritual energy and our emotional energy. It cuts our guts out. And so we're not facing the same challenge that they are, but we are facing a challenge that calls on our resilience as well.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. I'm Denise.
And I'm Kirsten.
And we hope you will join us as we explore the ins and outs of building healthy relationships with our adult children. Together, we'll speak with experts, share heartfelt stories, and get timely advice addressing topics that matter most to you.
Get ready to dive deep and learn to build and nurture deep connections with our adult children. And of course, when to bite our tongues.
So let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bite Your Tongue, the podcast. I'm Kirsten, and I'm here with my co-host, Denise, and we have some great news. Today's episode is being brought to you by our sponsor, Howdy Homemade Ice Cream. What's so special about Howdy is that it is a franchise model where all of the employees have intellectual or developmental disabilities. They call their employees heroes. They have a location in Colorado, two in Texas, one in North Carolina, one in Indiana, and one in Louisiana. You can check them out if you have a location near you by visiting their website at howdyhomemade.com. That's H-O-W-D-Y homemade.com.
Thanks so much, Kirsten. I had never heard about Howdy until you brought them to my attention. I'm so happy to know them. As it's getting hot now, I'm ready for ice cream. Not only do they have fabulous ice cream, but their mission is quite remarkable. They're really a perfect sponsor for today's episode because we're going to talk about resilience. Resilience is a topic really quite close to my heart. I'm going to be a little bit drop-dead honest here. I don't think I have very strong resilience, if that's the way you say it. I struggle a lot when things go wrong, and I almost become incapacitated. Publicly, you can't see this, but if something happens with my adult children, it'll just be in my mind constantly, day in and day out. I'm hoping that with our guests today, we can learn a little bit more about how to test our resilience, build our resilience, and support our adult children in building their resilience, because life is not always a walk in the park.
That's the truth. Well, then let's just get started. We are honored today to have with us Linda Hoops and Chris Burbank. Some early listeners may remember that we interviewed Chris in season 1, episode 5. The topic for that episode was parenting adult children with special needs. As a reminder, Chris is the proud mother of 3 grown children, including a son born 4 months premature with severe cerebral palsy. She is now a coach specializing in helping parents figure out how to make the most of their lives, even when it is messy. Since we spoke to Chris, she's collaborated on a new book with Linda Hoops called Embracing Another Normal. And we are going to talk about that book, but we're also going to talk about resilience in general because the co-author of the book is Linda Hoops, the expert of all experts when it comes to resilience.
There's no question, Kirsten, that with neuronormal adult children, you need an extra dose of resilience, I'm sure. But I think, as I said before, all of us have to check in with our resilience as we go through life. But let's give a little bit more about Linda before we get started. She's the founder of the Resilience Alliance and a licensed psychologist. She spent the last 25 years in the world of business and organization. She's come up with tools to test your resilience because she believes that everyone has seeds of resilience in them to weather life storms. We just have to learn to nurture them and grow them. So let's get started. Welcome, Chris and Linda. It's the first time we're meeting you, Linda, so we're so glad you're here with us. And Chris, welcome back.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Before we begin, I was very taken by the quote you shared at the beginning of the book, maybe because I love Winnie the Pooh, and it was words that Christopher Robin said to Pooh Bear. Could one of you read that quote and then tell us why it's at the beginning of your book?
I would be happy to read it.
This is Chris talking, so you get their voices. Go ahead, Chris.
It goes something like this.
Promise me you'll always remember. You're braver than you believe, and stronger than you seem, and smarter than you know.
I think it has two meanings. One, I think parents want our kids to know these things. And we work really hard, whether our children have disabilities or not, we work really hard to help them believe these things and understand these things. I think sometimes we forget that we also need to believe and understand these things about ourselves. The book is an attempt to provide that kind of guidance and reassurance to parents. And much of what parents take away from the book and other readers take away from the book can be shared with other people, including children.
Why do you think we all struggle with feeling like we're less brave, less smart, less capable?
I know if you look at neuroscience, we're programmed to look at the negative. We remember the times that we weren't brave, and we remember the times that we weren't strong, that we weren't smart, or that we didn't do what we wanted to do. It's much harder to remind ourselves of some of the more positive, right? It's why people see all the value in a gratitude journal. It's because we are neurologically programmed to look at the more negative aspects of these things.
I like the way you said that and remember it. Linda, do you have any thoughts to that?
I think that oftentimes we compare ourselves to the wrong things, the wrong standards. We compare ourselves to the best of what we see around us and to perfection. And we forget that we are all works in progress and we're all human beings. In fact, one of the elements of resilience is recognizing our own strengths, recognizing our own superpowers, tapping into those times when we have been strong and brave, and drawing on that to help us as we meet new challenges.
Interesting. Let's start with the book, how you guys came to do this together and why. Linda, you take this. I'm making assignments now.
Okay. All right. That works. I have been studying resilience for about 30 years, and I got started in the context of organizational change around why some people seem to move through change more easily than others. But over time, I've gotten much more interested in resilience in everyday settings and the everyday challenges that we face. As part of that, I developed a tool called the Challenge Map that looks at the broad set of challenges that we all as human beings might face. Everything from the challenges that we choose because they're challenging, to the challenges that life brings us, like getting older, to the challenges that are brought to us by people who wish us harm. There are some common threads through all of those, but oftentimes when people hear the word resilience, it's sort of the little black dress or Swiss Army knife of life skills, and people just see it as this big abstract thing or as something that we are or we aren't. And so as I've dug more into what resilience is, I realized that it's very important to ground it in the particular, in the specific kinds of challenges that people are facing. And I've gotten very interested in learning about particular kinds of challenges that different groups of people might face. So for instance, the challenge of parents raising children with disabilities. I have a sister who has a daughter, an adult daughter with Down syndrome, and I've watched how that has unfolded for both of them. And it's been really interesting to see how resilience plays out in that. I have a community of people that I work with, and Chris is among that group. And I reached out to that community and said, would anybody who knows something about a particular group and wants to speak to that group be interested in teaming up so that I can bring my expertise around resilience and you can bring your deep knowledge of the subject that we're going to talk about and work on some co-authored pieces. And so this one with Chris is the first one that's been released. There are several others in the background. And this has been just a tremendous and fun and exciting and energizing collaboration. It has been the greatest one to kick the project off with.
Well, you guys seem like quite a team. As you said, there's all kinds of different kinds of resilience. So the two we're going to talk about today, one is, and we say this in the intro, there's no doubt that a parent with a neurotypical adult child is going to have a different form or a different tools of resilience than someone like Kirsten and I. I said at the beginning of the episode, I think I have low resilience, meaning that when I get affected by something, like let's say my adult child is struggling, I fall apart completely. I become the weakest link. I don't do it publicly, but I want to talk a little bit about both for someone like me and for someone who might have a child with neuro differences, where we start to develop these resilience. I know you have something called prosilience. Tell us about this, and I want you guys to take over. Where do we start? How do we begin?
I just want to say two things. I had a reader I had somebody tell me they read the whole book and they pronounced that pro-silence and they had no understanding. What do you mean I have to be silent? The second thing I want to say is, Denise, is that we have two neurotypical kids. We have one son with severe disabilities. Right. And a lot of what we're hearing in regards to this book and this topic of conversation is that so much of this is applicable to every parent. I got an email just the other day. I read this. I don't have kids with disabilities, but so much of this resonated. So I'm hopeful that the conversation today will speak to parents like you, because we all face these challenges. And as Linda said, they last some longer than others. And we have natural ways of reacting to those situations. And that's where this aspect of the toolkit comes into play.
So let's go. You're talking to your prospective readership. Where do they start? What do they do? I think you even have a test of some sort we can take that identifies whether we have, is that a way to say it, weak resilience, or low resilience? What?
All right, I'll take that one on.
Okay.
And here's one of the things I want you to remember all the way to the end. Resilience is a verb. It's more about what we do than about who or what we are. There is a set of tools, a set of mindsets, a set of actions that we take as we encounter challenges that help us move through them more effectively and with better results. And so as we resilience our way through challenges, we often have a chance to build these skills and muscles and so on. So as I hear you talk about your own situation, one of the first places I would go in the prosilience framework, which is what Chris and I have applied to this book, there are four basic building blocks. And one of them is about calming. Mm-hmm. That is about the ability to self-regulate, to be able to notice when that spin is starting to happen and to do some things that will break that spin from happening, or at least slow it down a bit. Breathing, getting out in nature, things like that. What I would say to you, and really to anyone who says, I'm not very resilient, I fall apart, I would say, start by recognizing what it feels like when you are getting into that zone and tap into some of the tools that you have built over time, whether it's getting a hug from somebody or hanging out with a person who's calm or listening to music, because that's the very first step. And then there are a set of other building blocks, which we can dig into in more detail if you'd like.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, that we can build as well. So the second building block, and I'll pause after this and ask Chris if she has some examples to share or stories as well. The second building block is really about facing into how we're going to approach the particular challenge. There are really three fundamental strategies that we can meet a challenge with. One of them is to just adjust ourselves to whatever the reality is. Okay, I don't like this, but I'm going to figure out how to deal with it. The second strategy is we intervene. We seek to change the situation. We want to make something different from what it is. And then the third strategy, which we can't apply all the time, is to be able to reframe the challenge so that it feels less like a problem and more like an opportunity, so that we can see something hopeful and possible in it. For instance, if it's your kid and they're having a problem, being able to see how this might be a great growth opportunity for them as they work through it, a great learning process. So figuring out sort of which of those and what combination of those strategies are appropriate to apply in a given situation is another thing that we can build. Learning to let go of the things that are out of our control and adjust ourselves and work our way through. Learning how to really dig in and do well at advocating for ourselves or standing up or digging in and working to change things. And then having that skill of telling ourselves a different story about what might be going on. So those are the first two building blocks, and I'll pass the baton to Chris for a few minutes to see what you would add.
I would imagine, Denise, that you're a lot like me. Do you take comfort in solving problems?
You and I both smiled when she said solving it. And I think as you were talking, I realized that I got to use it as a verb. I am very resilient personally. If I come up against something, when I lack resilience is when I don't have control. So you're absolutely right, Chris. And you don't have control when other people around you face a hurdle or a roadblock. Is that right?
Well, one of the things I loved when you asked previously about why this book can be, when I met Linda it was in the context of an assessment that she created. And I actually use this assessment when I work with clients, and it really kind of helps people measure where they're most comfortable, how they're most comfortable responding in situations. But I just said respond. And if you think about the verb prosilience, mm-hmm. that pro is a very thoughtful use of the word and the antecedent to prosilience. It means that you're taking something and you're used to being reactive and you're being proactive. And I love when Linda talks about resilience as she defines it as challenge readiness. So problem solving is one way to address a challenge, but there are other ways. I think that the more prosilient, the more comfortable we become with some of these other things, the less likely we are to automatically go into problem-solving mode. And every parent whose child is growing up knows that you reach a point where you go head-to-head when you try to solve something that they believe is theirs to solve. I see the smile, right?
Right. And that's what our whole podcast is about. Bite our tongue, step back, practice self-control.
Yeah. One of the other things I love is this concept of energy and resilience being the energy you need to deal with what you have versus what you expected. In the case of an adult child where everything's running smoothly, some of us never expect that. I would venture to say that my kids are in their 20s. I've been hearing for a while, I need to expect that they're going to come home and live with me. that they're going to stumble. They're not going to get into this career groove the way my generation did. But if you talk to parents who are 10 or 15 years older than I am, no, their expectation is that everybody's going to launch and then it's going to be retirement for us. And it isn't sometimes what we expected that we got. And so this concept of resilience is, all right, well, where does the energy come from then to deal with that and to navigate that?
How about for our adult children? Are there steps that they can take now that may help them build resilience as they go through life?
I would say absolutely. And let's start with this idea that we have a set of muscles that we can build as we encounter challenges. And this is the third building block, really. So very nice segue into that. And the thing is, we can't build physical muscles without pushing up against something. We can't build resilience muscles unless we encounter some kinds of challenges. So I actually think that the process starts best when it's not with adult children, but with children, little ones. Parents who try to remove all the obstacles from the path of their children don't set them up to be resilient adults. Not challenges that are going to overwhelm and crush us, but challenges that are going to take us out of our comfort zone, get us trying things. I'll walk through the muscles really quickly, but there are things that we can do to encourage, support, coach, whatever. But one of the most important things to do is to get out of the way if it's a challenge that they can manage and recognize that there is some muscle building that needs to happen. The first of these building blocks is positivity. Now, that could sound like Pollyanna. Let's do rainbows and unicorns and all. But it's really not. It's really more that skill of, in the midst of ambiguity, recognizing that you can choose to focus on what's going well and what's going right, in addition to what's going wrong. Chris talked about the neuroscience of focusing on the negative. We need to actively put energy into the process of seeking and paying attention to the positive as well, so that we're counterbalancing that tendency. The second muscle is around confidence, and that's around recognizing our own strengths, being able to draw on past experiences of overcoming difficulties, of mastering new situations, of growing through stretching ourselves, and recognizing those strengths and leaning into them. So both of those muscles, I think of as the core muscles of resilience, because they are the things that lead us to use our energy moving into challenges, rather than using that energy in worry and rumination and avoidance and hiding under the desk and running away. So those are the first two muscles. I'll walk quickly through the rest. The third one is priorities, and that's the muscle that we use to set boundaries, to say yes and no, to align our energy with the things that are most important with us. And I think young adults oftentimes have to learn that they have agency and sovereignty in situations, and that it's okay for them to find ways to say no to things that they don't want to do, because that allows a bigger yes to the things that are most important to them. So that's a muscle that we can build. The fourth muscle is creativity, which is the muscle of yes and. It's the muscle of being able to live in ambiguity and to not have to have a right answer immediately, to be able to open up possibilities and to look at polarities, to think that multiple things could be true at once, and to sort of live in that space. And then the fifth one is connection, which is the recognition that resilience is a team sport and that there are other people who have resources and energy and ideas and thoughts and possibilities that they can bring to the table. But many of us feel like we have to have all the answers, or that it's only ever going to get done right if we do it ourselves, or that it's somehow shameful to ask for help. And so that ability to build community, to have reciprocity and relationships so that we give and take and can draw on the people around us is really important. Then there's a structure muscle, which is sometimes counterintuitive because we don't often think about structure when we think about challenges and change and so on. But if we can use good systems and processes and plans to master the things that are predictable in our lives and use as little energy as we need to in dealing with those, we've got a lot more available to deal with the surprises. This is a muscle that I constantly work on. And then the last one is experimenting. And this is the muscle of curiosity, of getting out of our comfort zone and trying things, of learning from experience and taking some risk. They sort of form a complete set of, I encounter a challenge, I move toward it, I open up options, I reach out to other people, I put some plans and systems in place, and then I get out there and I learn from experience. Sometimes that brings me new challenges that get the cycle going again. Those are muscles that we can all build, and we can build them by little practices, sort of a daily practice. For example, for positivity, I have, and I've told this story many times and he knows I tell it, I have a husband who is a self-described defensive pessimist. It's his job to think about all the things that can go wrong and guard against them. And that's just part of how he rolls. But we have started years ago now doing a gratitude practice as we sit down to dinner each night, to just think about what's one thing that we are grateful for today. And sometimes it's just, I've got food in front of me, right? And a roof over my head. But oftentimes now he'll remind me. And so it's that little bit of turning the antenna in the brain toward the positive and toward what's going well. We can also experiment through finding a resilience gym, through finding a place where we know we're going to encounter challenges, whether it's learning a new musical instrument or taking on a physical challenge or whatever it might be. I do some sailboat racing and it's my resilience gym because there's all kinds of things that happen that allow me to stretch those resilience muscles and flex them.
I love this topic and I used to hate it. The concept of resilience, I thought people just expected me to be resilient. I was a parent, and then I was the parent of somebody who had all these disabilities, and this is just, you have to do this. What I realized was that, no, you don't have to, but if you do, it plays to everything that parents go through. Every single one of those muscles, when Linda describes them, I think about my son who's in grad school. I think about my daughter who just moved far away. I think about my son who's trying to, my other son who's trying to create a world of his own, and too many people are trying to help him and he doesn't want all the help. I think every parent who listens to your podcast probably has these things that come up when they think about things like experimenting or positivity or confidence. It's interesting. I am very different from Linda in that I take great comfort in structure and process. It's probably why I love the concept of a toolkit for building my resilience. But I think the first step in all of it is talking about it, noticing it, introducing the topic to your kids. This is all really normal stuff. It's part of just growing up. And quite frankly, it's stuff that nobody talked to me about. And I just had a milestone birthday. This is stuff that once you start to talk about it, then you start to notice it. Then you can actually begin to work on it. You can identify the gym. And you can work on it with each other, including your kids or your partner.
You have a whole chapter on working on it with your partner. I really love that. And I loved all the questions at the end. And now let's take a quick break to hear a little more about our sponsor.
Today's episode on resilience is sponsored by Howdy Homemade. So a big thank you to Howdy. Howdy Homemade is a franchise model where all of the employees have developmental disabilities. They are called heroes. It is a business with a purpose, and for anyone who knows me, that is the best kind of business to have. I get to feel good while also eating great quality ice cream. and they have non-dairy options for me. Their vision is to bring the joy of ice cream to the hearts of the community, served by remarkable people with intellectual or developmental disabilities. Their mission is to reshape the way society views these individuals with unique disabilities through their dedication to hiring, training, and commitment to leadership and achievement. They have a location in Aurora, Colorado, at the corner of Arapaho and Parker Road. They are available for private events where they bring their ice cream and other goodies to you. For those of you not in Colorado, they have two locations in Texas, one in Louisiana, North Carolina, another in Indiana. So a big thank you to Howdy Homemade and to all of the heroes.
And back to the show. I want to say one thing to you, Chris, from this interview versus the interview we did. I think you were our second episode or third when we started our podcast. And this was, we talked about this offline. You said to me when we first started talking about this episode, I think your son was home for the holidays or something. Your son with cerebral palsy. Tell me his name so I don't.
His name's Andrew.
Andrew, that's right, Andrew. And you said you were so happy to have him home, but he couldn't wait to get back. And it's almost like, who would have thunk that? That was a positive that you never imagined. And it was right there in your face. And I'm watching you today, and I see, well, you've had to have studied it. You wrote the whole book. But learning more about this resilience has changed your whole attitude in how you're approaching things. But my guess is you're still working on it every day, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I tell people when I talk about this, half the reason I'm talking about it is because I need to talk myself through all these things, right? This is not as self-serving as it seems. But I also believe our son is in his late 20s. This is a young man who is profoundly disabled. Right. And there were many times in his life that I never thought he would live anywhere but in our home. And now that he is not living at home and I have a few extra moments in the day, I realized that there are all these parents out there who don't have that yet. And they're not going to be able to read a book, let alone write a book or read a few books. So working with Linda and making this really accessible, as you mentioned, asking these questions at the end of every chapter to kind of get people to apply what they're learning about to their own life, it was all a way of trying to make this a little bit more turnkey because I think it is incredibly powerful. As I said, really powerful, not just for parents whose kids have some complex medical condition or a diagnosed disability, but just in general for people who are used to caring for others and then have a life where maybe there's a little bit of space opened up for them to think about these things. I don't want to open a can of worms, but I think about people who have older parents.
I was going to say that, Kirsten. Yeah.
Hugely applicable. It's part of the reason why Linda's doing a series of books.
I love that. And I will look forward to any of them at this point. One of the things that I found that was as difficult is the letting go part. And I've gotten much better at it. I practice it, to your point earlier, but not letting go seems to almost make things worse. And I think that this would be something that's especially true for parents who have kids with some kind of special needs, but also people whose kids are struggling with drug addiction or really a lot of different things. I mean, transitions in their lives. Do you find that there are areas where you find it more difficult to let go?
Sure. I think even when we talk about the letting go aspect, safety is huge. As parents, we're really worried about things. My mind goes to dark places very quickly when somebody's safety is at risk. But we talk in the book about this concept called the dignity of risk and learning to see risk as a gift, your ability to accept risk when it's not safe, when, you know,
when
we're not talking
life-threatening
death, right? I had somebody who read the book and they equated the dignity of risk to something with an older parent. And I said, no, because that particular situation, you're putting other people at risk. What we write about and what we talk about is this notion of experimenting, this notion of saying, I'm not really comfortable with it, but we have a safety net. We have plan A and plan B and plan C. We've all talked about it. We've practiced it. So I need to accept that risk and I need to let this play out and see what happens. Oftentimes when we can do that, we're really surprised that the thing we feared is not actually what happens. And the benefits of our being able to do that, to let go in that way, are immense for the child at whatever age that we're talking about.
That's true. It's definitely true.
It's interesting that it was my favorite chapter in the book to write about, because I also think it's not just letting go in the sense of a child, it's letting go yourself of what mm-hmm. you expect of yourself, what you define as a good parent, right? And it's that notion, like Linda said, of reframing. I meet somebody now who's given their kid a long leash and who has learned and trained themselves. They're always there to help, but the child is not relying upon them to be the first line of defense when a problem occurs. I think, oh my gosh, that's a good parent. What a gift they're giving. But it does not come naturally.
I want to ask a quick question, Linda. You had said that you start when your kids are little. They have to have struggles and all this kind of thing. I wonder, with all your work with people in the business world, our generation of parenting was sort of the start of the helicopter parent, arranging the play dates, not wanting the kid to fail, trophies for everybody, blah, blah, blah. Have you seen changes in the resilience in people that were raised by our generation, that they haven't developed the resilience because we haven't let them?
I can tell you that in working with adolescents, we don't do a lot of that, but the people that I know who have worked with adolescents have found that's often an issue, mm-hmm. that they just haven't had things to push up against, and they haven't had places that they can build those muscles. It's hard to untangle what's generational and what comes from what source. I would say that we all have room to work on this. If these are muscles, it's like saying, okay, is this generation less strong when they go to the gym? Maybe, I don't know. We all have places that we can and should be working to build. So wherever people are starting, we all have these muscles within us, and it's really learning to recognize them, to learn how we use them, and so on. Are you guys okay if I jump back to the question that we were talking about before?
Yeah, do whatever you want to do.
So this question about us losing it when our child is having a challenge actually brings up this point that our child is facing a challenge, but it's a challenge for us too. It's just a different challenge. And so our resilience shows up there. In the challenge map model, there's a category of challenge that is called challenges that come as a side effect of other choices that we make. Right. So when we choose to become a parent, maybe we don't always choose, but we choose to actively enter into parenting, we don't do it because it's challenging for the most part. Most people don't have kids because it's a challenge. So we move into these things that we do that, oh, by the way, challenges come with them. Like, I choose to travel internationally. All right. Well, there's challenge. And you don't even know all what they're going to be. It's just they're going to be challenges. For your child, the challenge may be a mental health issue, a financial issue, whatever. For you, it's a different kind of a challenge. I would put it into the spiritual energy challenge or the spiritual energy category, because challenges can draw on our physical energy, our mental energy, our emotional energy, our spiritual energy.
That makes perfect sense. I heard something and I want to know how this plays into it. My mother-in-law was always the type of person, if the kids faced a challenge, her reaction would be, well, what are you worried about? They're going to do great. I read somewhere that sometimes when we show our negativity, our concerns become too much, we're giving them the message that we don't believe in them. Have you ever heard anything like that?
We model how we think about things. Even if we don't say it, we model what our kids learn about this. There's a difference between saying, I know you're going to do great, which is an outcome-based thing, mm-hmm. to I know you have the tools to yes. dig into this. Yeah. It gets to the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. If you tell your child that they're beautiful, that they're smart, that they're all these things, that sets a bar that they have to meet. But if you tell them, I know you are capable of learning and growing and becoming, and that even if this doesn't go perfectly, you will learn from it and you will continue to move forward, that's a much more resilience-enhancing message.
The other thing, Denise, is that when you think about these muscles, for example, I may not have a clue what my kid is going to actually decide about his career, but I can work with him, compliment him, model for him the value in experimenting, the value in being curious, the value in taking his confidence and talking to people about the different work that they do and whether or not he might have an interest and be good in that line of work. Mm-hmm. So these muscles, to Linda's point, they're applicable not only to the given challenge, but they're also applicable to you as a parent in terms of how you're interacting with your child and what you are encouraging and complimenting and trying to reinforce as they address some of these things. In some families, some of this stuff is not really valued. I have people I know, and it was very clear. You have a linear career path. You're going to be a doctor or a lawyer. Maybe if you're lucky, you can do something in finance, but God forbid you'd want to be an entrepreneur. And so these kids come up against that, and their parents aren't big at experimenting and being curious. How are they ever supposed to be? So it brings me back to this notion of being aware of the value of some of these muscles in the first place. Even if you didn't grow up that way, even though you don't think you're programmed that way, these are things we can learn. They are muscles that we can experience and strengthen. I have a question, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but when you, Denise, think of some of the things in this toolkit, are there any that jump out at you as like, oh yeah, that's my default. I like that one. That's where I'm most comfortable.
Great
when we
question.
Talked about things.
Yeah, yeah, I'm thinking.
Creativity.
I would say structure for me, I'm very linear when it comes to things. And I think when you talked about the muscles, for me, exercise, I have to get my angst out in a physical way to let go of it. But I like the way you said, Linda, how different the struggle is for an adult kid than it is for us. We have to learn not to get on the phone and call the professor because they're flunking algebra, which sadly a lot of parents are still doing. And that's stopping the kid from developing any kind of resilience, I imagine. Okay.
I think the other thing to remember, and I had a parent tell me this in the course of our interviews for this book, our feelings are not necessarily our kids' feelings.
That's 100% true. Yes.
And that's a really hard thing for most parents. Even if they understand it, they don't just process it and own that very well.
Didn't you say that earlier, Kirsten, about the kid calls with a problem and we've developed it into a huge deal that's not really a huge deal? We just create huge deals.
The other thing is this concept of capability. In the book, we call it the curse of capability. I asked you about what's your default muscle, right? We have superpowers. Most of us are really good at something. If we over rely on that, not only do we do what Kirsten said, which is sometimes we make a big mess when there isn't one, but just so we can come in and clean it up, or we prevent our kids from and other people in our lives from developing any of that superpower themselves. That's another, I think, for me, when I think about what's the real benefit of learning how to let go, becoming comfortable with some of that risk is what enables the other people in our lives to step up. We have to get out of the way.
Yeah, right. Do you see a difference between men and women in resilience?
Statistically, slightly, yes. But it shows up in different ways. For men, sometimes it's easier to overuse their confidence muscle. Mm-hmm. For women, sometimes it's easier to overuse their relationship muscle, but it's not 100% either way. There are more differences within the realm of women and within the realm of men than there are absolute differences between one or the other. We've seen some trends, and we've seen some trends as people get older. Sometimes they feel more isolated and the connection is harder for them. But, you know, it's interesting. This whole realm of adult children is fascinating. As I'm recording this with you guys, I am visiting my mom in Florida. My brother and his wife are living at her house while their house is under construction. So we are in the soup of adult children.
Right.
I was reminded of a reframe of how I, as an adult child, was able to reuse my reframing strategy to deal with something that was driving me crazy over time. I love my mom dearly. And one of her superpowers is that she can spot errors a mile away. She would always point out apostrophes on signs that were missing or misplaced when I was growing up. That's just her. I come from the tribe of the word people, and she's one of them. For the longest time in my life, when I would share something with her, the first thing she would do is to point out where I had made mistakes. There was this part of me that was like, oh gosh, she just doesn't think much of me, does she? And she's always pointing out the mistakes and what's going on there. At some point, I was walking with my neighbor, my walking buddy, who's often a source of resilience. And she said, it means it's that she thinks you're a perfectible human being. It's actually a great compliment. So I realized that part of her love language is editing, is wanting to make it better. Once I was able to tell myself that story, I used that resilience tool to keep this one energy. We talk about sustaining our energy. Well, one of the ways our energy gets drained is by just little drips and drops. I plugged a leak there. There was a leaky energy thing it made me not want to share stuff with her that I'd done. But now I just expect that's going to be part of the response, and that's okay. And it's in love.
I love that you came to a place of expecting it, which allowed you to accept it. I was thinking while you were talking that I have a number of friends who are faced with a lot of challenges, not even necessarily for their children, but for themselves or for their aging adult or aging parents. And what strikes me is there are some of my friends that just get it. They understand the resilience that they need to do it. They're very capable, but I have this other section of friends that just aren't. And everything is this doom and gloom. Are there things I can do, even as a friend, that can help them navigate better?
It depends on what they're open to in terms of learning. There are things that you can do without them knowing it. There are things that you can do by initiating a conversation with them. One of the concepts that I often talk about with regard to resilience is energy spirals. So there's a really interesting research article I read where a set of researchers took the idea of resilience, and they basically said, look, resilience isn't a thing. We can get into these zones where a physical symptom can lead to an emotional symptom. We feel hopeless. Then we act awkwardly. And we get into this self-sustaining spiral, which can lead to chronic anxiety, chronic depression, all of those kinds of things. They basically said, look, resilience is anything that can help slow down or break up those automatic connections. Any tools that we use, whether it's the ability to tell ourselves a different story, reconceptualization, or the calming, the self-regulation, all of those things operate because they keep those things from automatically spinning mm-hmm. out. I think about the ways that we create positive energy spirals, how we both neutralize the negative ones, but also create the positive ones, the uplifting ones. The things that you can do without telling them can include creating lift in whatever way you can, whatever little thing you can do that starts to create a little positive, whether it's complimenting them on the glasses that they just got or whatever, all of those things start to move the spirals in a positive direction. If they are more open to learning, recognizing that there are tools they can use or modeling or suggesting or whatever are also giving them a framework or a way to think about it, to notice that some of these things are happening and to recognize that they have some muscles that they can call on.
Well, that seems to lead into, we're getting late into the episode. Let's talk about our listeners and what they need to do to get started. So I want to learn more about my resilience. I want to build some of my muscles. I want to maybe take your test that you have online, Linda. I want to read the book that you've written. Where do I start?
The first place I'd go is I have a book called Prozilience that is a great place to start because it's got a lot of tools and strategies and exercises for building these muscles, some simple self-assessments, a lot of workbooky kind of stuff. And I also have a Substack newsletter that's prozilience.substack.com, which has a number of small entries, but there's one of them, I think it's entry number 5, that is about the challenge map. It's about the challenges that we face. One of the things I would encourage people to do to start with is to just look at what challenges right now are drawing on your energy. Whether it's personal ones, work ones, life ones, aging ones, parent ones, because we only have one supply of energy that we draw on. I would say start to notice what those things are and then pay attention. I think that finding one piece that you want to work on and build and then making a small practice around that. So let's say that you think you want to become more focused, have a higher priorities muscle, taking 5 minutes each day to think about the three things that are most important to you. Finding that little biceps curl for that muscle and putting it into practice are all things that I would suggest as a starting place.
Well, and I loved what you said about gratitude. I'm starting that tonight with my husband. He's going to look at me like I've lost my mind, but we're going to do it. Anyway, Chris.
I heard an interesting thing about a woman who survived Hurricane Katrina. And she said that she had been doing a gratitude practice for a couple of years prior to the hurricane. It really, she thinks, helped rewire her brain such that when the hurricane came, when life was in such disarray, she had the ability to find happiness in the fact that it wasn't raining one day, or that a neighbor was doing better than everybody had expected in these small things. I think I just want to echo what Linda said. Getting started is really about digging into some of these resources. And it's really helpful sometimes to just have like a thought partner, somebody in your life who wants to talk about this stuff with you. In the case of parents, it might be somebody that you co-parent with, but it also might just be another friend of yours who's a parent. My website is chrisburbank.com. People can certainly reach out to me. A lot of what happens in one-on-one coaching is people trying to identify what habits and behaviors don't serve them any longer. If people are doing some of these things in their lives and they're not happy with the results, how do they make some of those changes? I'd be happy to refer people to resources and that sort of thing. We also have a lot of resources in the book. And as I said, the book has a much bigger application than just parents of kids with disabilities. It's great for educators, medical professionals, and friends of people who just want to understand others in their community.
We will share links to everything you've talked about.
Chris and Linda, since we are wrapping up, at the end of each of our recordings, we do ask our guests to leave 2 to 3 takeaways that you want the listeners to remember. So what would those be?
Well, for me, it's pretty easy. I think it's really important to remember that we can be proactive in this regard, that resilience is a verb. It is not something you are born with. It's something that you have the ability to grow and develop and practice all the time. And I would have encouragement for people, because you may be somebody like me who started out not feeling all that comfortable with the topic, not feeling very confident of your abilities. The more you learn and the more you practice and the more you experiment, the more comfortable you get and the more resilient you become. So it would just be an encouragement to dip your toe in the water and play around in the playground, because it can be really fun and rewarding.
Okay, Linda.
I would say resilience runs on energy. All these muscles that we have inside us are much easier to use when we have a strong supply of energy. So taking care of our physical selves, taking care of our mental and emotional selves, building our spiritual energy by connecting with things that are meaningful and purposeful for us, gives us more to work with when we encounter challenges. I would say that the other thing I would leave people with, Chris already took my resilience as a verb. So, but what I would say is this idea of energy spirals, of noticing the small things that you can do when you're getting into a spin, practicing some tools for yourself, whether it's breathing or getting outside or something, a happy place that you can go to. I would say practice that zone of recognizing when you're starting to get disrupted and doing something that will get you out of that fight or flight mode and into the mode where you're actually able to engage and work with things.
This has been great. Thank you guys so much for your time today.
You're both just top notch. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Well, Denise, that was an amazing episode. One of the things that struck me as so interesting is that this could be used in absolutely every scenario I can think of, whether it's somebody with a health issue, whether it's somebody with an addiction issue, almost anything. We all could use a lot more resilience every day. And just as a reminder, you can find Chris and Linda's book, Embracing Another Normal, Resilient Strategies for Raising Children with Disabilities, on Amazon. And you can also learn more about Linda's Resilience Alliance at resiliencealliance.com. A huge thank you to Howdy Homemade for helping make this episode possible.
Thanks so much, Kirsten. And I think you're right. This can be applied to so many different ways. Thank you so much to Connie Gorant Fisher, our audio and production engineer. Please write to us at biteyourtonguepodcast@gmail.com and share your comments and ideas. And finally, please always consider supporting our efforts by going to our website, biteyourtonguepodcast.com, and buying us a virtual cup of coffee. Or remember now, you can become a member for just $5 a month. Last but not least, please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, share your thoughts, ideas. We've got a lot of great things coming up.
And remember, sometimes you just have to bite your tongue.